"Rat! Rat!" and bellowed out loud. Aid was near him. Eliza and Georgiana had run for Mrs. Reed, who was gone upstairs. She now came upon the scene, followed by Bessie and her maid Abbott. We were parted. I heard the words, "Dear, dear, what a fury to fly at Master John. Did ever anybody see such a picture of passion?" Then Mrs. Reed subjoined, "Take her away to the Red Room and lock her up in there." Four hands were immediately laid upon me, and I was borne upstairs. "Hold her arms, Miss Abbott. She's like a mad cat." "For shame, for shame," cried the lady's maid. "What shocking conduct, Miss Eyre, to strike a young gentleman, your benefactress's son, your young master." They had got me by this time into the apartment indicated by Mrs. Reed, and had thrust me upon a stool. "If you don't sit still, you must be tied down," said Bessie. "You ought to be aware, miss, that you are under obligations to Mrs. Reed. She keeps you. If she were to turn you off, you would have nothing to go to but the poorhouse." I had nothing to say to these words. They were not new to me. My very first recollections of existence included hints of the same kind. "Besides," said Miss Abbott, "God will punish you. Say your prayers, Miss Eyre, when you're by yourself. For if you don't repent, something bad might be permitted to come down the chimney and fetch you away." They went, shutting the door and locking it behind them. Mr. Reed had been dead 9 years. It was in this chamber he breathed his last. Here he lay in state, hence his coffin was borne by the undertaker's men. And since that day, a sense of dreary consecration had guarded it from frequent intrusion. My head still ached and bled with the blow. No one had reproved John for wantonly striking me. And because I had turned against him to avert further irrational violence, I was loaded with general opprobrium. "Unjust, unjust," said my reason. Daylight began to forsake the Red Room. I heard the rain still beating continuously on the staircase window and the wind howling in the grove behind the hall. I grew by degrees cold as a stone, and then my courage sank. All said I was wicked, and perhaps I might be so. Was I fit to die? Was the vault under the chancel of Gateshead Church an inviting bourne? In such a vault, I had been told, did Mr. Reed lie buried. I could not remember him, but I knew that he was my own uncle, my mother's brother, that he had taken me, when a parentless infant, to his house, and that in his last moments he had required a promise of Mrs. Reed that she would rear and maintain me as one of her own children. A singular notion dawned upon me. I doubted not that if Mr. Reed had been alive, he would have treated me kindly. And now, as I sat looking at the white bed and overshadowed walls, I began to recall what I had heard of dead men, troubled in their graves by the violation of their last wishes, revisiting the earth to punish the perjured and avenge the oppressed. And I thought Mr. Reed's spirit, harassed by the wrongs of his sister's child, might quit its abode, whether in the church vault or in the unknown world of the departed, and rise before me in this chamber. I wiped my tears and hushed my sobs, fearful lest any sign of violent grief might waken a preternatural voice to comfort me, or elicit from the gloom some haloed face bending over me with strange pity. This idea, consolatory in theory, I felt would be terrible if realized. With all my might, I endeavored to stifle it. I endeavored to be firm. Shaking my hair from my eyes, I lifted my head and tried to look boldly round the dark room.